On this episode of 15 Minutes of Shame, we're going to have a candid conversation concerning the elephant that's in the room, from the break room to the bedroom. So let's talk.
Today is about the power of you.
We can be whatever we dream.
You're locked into another episode of 15 Minutes of Shame. Each week, we'll help you rebuild your life one brick at a time by addressing real life issues from a practical and biblical perspective.
I had to believe in myself like never before.
This is the Shame Free Radio Show.
Finding a solution to become the greatest.
And now your host, minister, author, grief and trauma support specialist, Dr. Ronald Zion Rose.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Greetings, Shame Free Life family and friends. You're back for another installment on 15 Minutes of Shame on the Shame Free Life Radio. I am your host, Ronald Zion, and it's a pleasure to be back with you again, family. And I am excited. I am just busting out of the seams because we have a show for you today that I believe is going to be a blockbuster, definitely an informative show for each and every one of you to listen to share it with as many people as possible, because I have with me in the house Brother Keith Belvin. Now, we also know him as K.L. Belvin, and up top, they know him as Big Dog. But today we're going to talk about, can you stand the pain? And, you know, we know about the New Edition song, Can You Stand the Rain? But can you stand the pain in dealing with mental health and men, specifically black men in America, black men all around the world, for that matter? And before we get into it, I'm going to ask KL, Keith Belvin, to introduce himself, and I'm going to ask him a couple of questions. You know, we talked about this before, you know, as far as who are you, what do you do it for, and why do you do it? And I can go into a long dissertation as far as introducing this man who has so many accolades. He's doing so many amazing things within the community. But based on those questions, I'm going to deflect and I'm going to ask him. So Keith, K.L. Belvin, step to the mic and just introduce yourself for the Shame Free Life family.
All right. Appreciate you, brother. I love the introduction. I got to take you on the road with me. I am Keith K.L. Belvin. Makes it easier. All one word. Keith K.L. Belvin, crisis specialist and award-winning author and publisher. And I say that not for vanity reasons. I say it because I put stuff out that catches people's attention. And that is my hope. What do? I'm a counselor, and I deal with people who need assistance with the problems that they're dealing with, as well as I help authors to create works of art that they can get out to the world that they control. So that's another area that I help. So I am just a servant, bro, and I do things best that I can to help those in need, man.
Absolutely. And you definitely do it well. You know, you specialize in crisis intervention, and some would call you a crisis interventionist. And I couldn't think of any more fitting person than to talk about this, because I know it's near and dear to your heart as far as the pain oftentimes that we go through as men, crying in the night, drinking it out, sexing it out, whatever the case may be, but at the end of the day, still not dealing with the pervasive pain that is there. So with all that being said, when it comes to mental health, KL, why is there such a stigma concerning mental health in men, but also primarily black men?
Oh, man, great question. Well, you got to look at the way we are raised. There's a social economic factor. There's just so many avenues, but that question is deep, but I'll do the best I can with it. Simply because as men of color, we're taught to be tough. So often we come from homes without a father, so we have to try to figure it out. And then those that come from a home with a father, a lot of things are stripped away in terms of you fall, you better not cry. If you get upset, you better not cry. You get into a disagreement, you better go handle that. And so we're taught the aggression, we're taught the strong part, but we're never taught to deal with the things that need healing: empathy, sympathy, compassion. We're not taught those things. And so when those things are not there to be fostered at a young age, well, they're not going to be there in the later years. And so now when those things really are needed when dealing with relationships, dealing with problems at work, dealing in social economic circles, when either the lack thereof work or when you're on a job, how to deal with different things, we don't know how to do it. Now, when you talk in culture, where we have a culture that doesn't vibe with get help and things like that, what are we supposed to do when now you got folks who go, you don't share your business, you keep that to yourself, and you know, I'm not crazy, I'm not going out here and ask for no help. So there's so many avenues that prevent solid mental health. And then the skin color, let's keep it real. The melanin in skin color automatically has us treated differently. We're feared. We're not respected. We're harmed, and in some cases hunted. So what are we supposed to do when all these factors push in on us and we don't have the understanding that we need assistance? That's what creates the problem. And that's why a lot of brothers just don't know to get help until everything is crashing in. And then it's, yo, who do I turn to?
You know, you hit on so many different things there. You know how we do. We just flow with it. When you talk about these compound issues, and I was reading something earlier today, this particular book, actually it was a crisis intervention book, and it talked about the acute issues, but it also talked about those chronic issues. Those acute meaning that, you know, you arrive on the scene and certainly what you do, if you're called on the scene to deal with a particular issue because it is a crisis, it's a one-time event. But if you could speak to those chronic issues, meaning that layers and layers of trauma, layers and layers of grief, be it abandonment, be it rejection, which low self-esteem comes out of that, drug addiction, chemical dependency, or just any kind of addiction that we see in our communities. Can you speak to the chronic issues that oftentimes we go through? And so when a person is in a crisis, that one-time event, now it becomes bigger than life, because of the undercurrent of so many other issues that were not dealt with. And can you just speak to that?
Sure. When we look at the word chronic, we're talking about persisting events, long time, long lasting, long term. So we're looking at things that stretch out over a lifetime. Well, actually, we're looking at things that stretch out over history. So as a man of color, we can't avoid discussing our history and what led us to this situation here. Now, we got to make sure that we don't get stuck where we drug ourselves out on just looking at history, that we forget the present. And then, of course, now we can't focus on the future. But we have to realize that from the time that we were dragged off those boats, we were mistreated. Things like buck breaking, where men did vile things to us in front of our women to make our women feel that there was no protection ever going to be available to you. So women started teaching their sons, don't fight back. And on through history, and I'm not going to sit here and go through the whole history lesson, but we have to look at those, because that's chronic pain and trauma that follows on through the years. And so as you go through and you see all the things that go on, well, we're still having those conversations today. And I do a show, a weekly show called Unapologetically Keith. We just talked last night about the mental trauma of police brutality. And you ask any person of color, have they had the talk? Well, that talk used to be about the birds and the bees. No. We now know as people of color, that talk is what to do when you are confronted with a policeman. What to say, how to act, know to keep your mouth shut, and the goal is to get home. Well, that sounds like some sci-fi movie or some ill-fated drama where, you know, a person is being hunted. But yet there was a movie like that. Ice-T was in, I think it was called Hunted. In The Purge, what did we see? A man of color being hunted down and Caucasians yelling, we have the right to kill him.
That's right.
So all of that factors into the chronic things that we deal with because the social economic situation that many people of color are in is chronic. The lack of education that many brothers and sisters suffer from is chronic. The poor relationships that a lot of men of color have to deal with not seeing solid husbands and wives is chronic. And once you start to look at all those negative pillars, you start to understand why there's such a devoid of feeling from men of color. We know that men infiltrate the prison system. Mm-hmm. And we know that the prison industrial complex is a major vehicle of money being made by folks that don't look like us. Mm-hmm. So that's another form of trauma. So when you line all these things up and then ask a man to try to deal with it when no one around him is saying, go get professional help, or professional help is not even offered in a way that seems palatable or pleasurable to even go, but that's a route. Well, we channel it through sports, we channel it through our penis, and we challenge it through self-medication. So it's not shocking that there's a high level of abuse, child and domestic. There's a high rate of marijuana and drug use, high rate of hypersexuality, and then a high rate of superior athletes and everything else. Because when we channel, how many times have you heard young black athletes, as they get older, go, well, if it wasn't for sports, for me to channel, and then just write in whatever athlete that you want. All those are connected to chronic situations that have pushed us as black males into a position where it is very difficult. Now, not impossible, but very difficult to get the help that's needed.
You know, you're absolutely right. It's so many different things that you said. And you know, I was looking earlier as well at the American Journal of Orthopsychiatry psychiatry. Yes. And it talked about depression, but it began to look at so many different samples that were taken. And so it talked about the depression affects an estimated 17 million people annually. So when you talk about this depression, oftentimes as men, we hide the reality of the depression, even though that it's there, but it manifests in so many different ways that you just named and others. In dealing with or speaking upon the depression and where it actually stemmed from, and the racial injustice, and we still have redlining going on. We still have so many different systemic issues that embody this country. Where is the church in all of this? Now, there are many churches that I have come in contact with, and you are a minister, so am I. We have friends that are all within the fivefold: apostle, prophet, evangelist, pastors, and teachers, etc. We understand that. We get that. But why is it? And we're going to continue to keep it, you know, a buck on this show. Why is it that we see mental health advocacy, mental health clinicians in white churches, but we see far few in black churches? Now, is it a financial deficit in which we cannot afford to have clinicians on the payroll? What exactly is going on? It's not as if we don't have qualified and certified clinicians within our community that are servicing our community. But when it comes to overall the church and the lack of participation, when it comes to the health of men, though we follow a man called Yeshua, Jesus, who also was a also practiced psychology amongst the disciples and everyone else that he met. So how was it that we can follow a man who was the physician of all physicians, who understood psychology, who understood emotional brokenness, and he dealt with it and healed that, yet we're not reflecting the same type of ministry that we are a part of. So my question is, where is the church in all this? Why is there such a lack of participation concerning Black men in the church?
All right. Here we go. This is where people are going to get very upset with me.
Okay.
First of all, let's look at Jesus in this, look at Jesus in his capacity, right? Jesus came back to get it who? Not regular folk. He came to get it church folk. So who killed them? Church folk. Yeah, Romans did the deed, but it was church folks who put the pressure on Pontius and got all the people riled up and said, kill this man. For doing what? Healing, teaching, feeding. Because it was going to come and upset their apple cart of what they had in motion. So what's the difference now? If they're going to kill Jesus then, why are we shocked at what we see in the church now? Studies have shown that 90% of all African Americans have connected to some type of religious use when dealing with mental health. And African Americans are like 20% more likely to experience mental health problems. But because we structure our churches often the way we structure certain things in the home, then we don't deal with the things that are wrong until it becomes a super crisis or so far gets away from it. Now, you mentioned a fivefold ministry. How many churches really have fivefold ministries when teaching is not actually on the same level as preaching? So where is a person supposed to get mental health from when we don't even set up our churches to be all ends taking care of the middle? The Pharisees and Sadducees wasn't trying to listen to the people. They were guiding the people, and they didn't try to listen to Jesus. They got upset because their position was being challenged. As a mental health clinician, I have fought with pastors of color, have had some say to me, I just don't see that as a thing I really want to deal with, when I said you need to have, and as I try to work on a regular, creating mental health ministries. And it's sad that the church that I do work with, I guess, quote unquote, would be considered a white church because they're it's mixed somewhat, but mostly white folks and a white pastor and white staff. But they get it. Well, first of all, the Bible, you mentioned Jesus. Jesus actually was the greatest therapist that ever lived. He did fantastic questions. He actually gave fantastic teachings in terms of trying to help folks who are struggling with something. He gave guidance, he gave structure, and was very firm when need be, and he called out BS when he saw it, and they killed him for it. And we're going through the same thing in the church now. We want to lay hands on, put oil on, and everything else, but nobody wants to actually sit down and go, what's the problem, and how do I deal with it? And there's clinicians sitting in every church, but yet we have to go to secular folks to get assistance because the church has too many old saints who think we can pray away everything. No, prayer is a fantastic way to speak to God. But then we got to get in and get this work done. And you need folks who specialize in mental health capacities, who understand the indoctrination of scripture to be able to hold that. Suicide is mentioned in the Bible. Did not Judas kill himself because he got flustered and couldn't realize what to do? Did we not see Elijah say he wanted to lay down and die, that suicide ideation? So you see things that are there in the Bible. We see trauma. We see all of it. And it's dealt with. And when you sit down with somebody and can offer that the Bible is actually an answer to the problems that we face as men and women, the church should be at the forefront. And my argument is simple. Someone outside should come in and be a part of mental health capacity who understands scripture. So when a pastor says, Brother Keith will be here on Wednesdays and Fridays from 4 to 7 o'clock, book your sessions with him, and the church should pay for it. Because if you know that somebody is struggling emotionally, spiritually, physically, whatever, well, don't we say the church is the great hospital? The church is the place where you come to get fixed. Well, how can you invite anybody to the hospital but yet not have the specialist that they need? What hospital is that? And the goal should always be to fix the person so they don't need the hospital. If you want to just get them in and keep them there, that's an institution. That's not a hospital. And the problem is we have too many folks who are so busy talking about what it used to be and setting up things how churches used to be, because nobody wants to question the pastor. And everything is drilled into, if the pastor's vision accepts it, then we accept it. If the pastor's vision isn't, then we don't. And then we got a lot of these pastors who have no history of mental health understanding, telling folks how they should actually be treated when it comes to mental health. That's what a fivefold ministry was supposed to balance out. Because if you have a prophet speaking to the Lord, if you have a preacher preaching the word, if you have the disciples out there doing the hard work, if you have evangelists out spreading the word and telling everybody about it, the key is the teacher. The teacher now says, this is what's in the word. This is how the word plays out. This is how we use the word to fix what's wrong. So when you invite a mental health counselor, clinician in who has a strong understanding of scripture, he is going to inadvertently teach. He's going to inadvertently counsel. He's going to inadvertently pastor. He's going to use those tools, because when we're behind closed doors and we can privately sit down and I go, what's the matter? Oh, my God, I can't stop staring at pastor's wife behind. You do know that's a sin, correct? Now, let's deal with why you do it. Mm. And you can go through the therapeutics, go through all ideologies, and deal with the Bible at the same time, and move this person closer to God. So when they go back out to be part of the parishion, they're good. We're not doing that. And we're not doing it because we lack vision in the church, so people turn away from the church and go to second places.
Hmm. You know, you're absolutely right. You said a couple of things here. And you know, just to coincide with what you're saying, when we get down to the whole crux of it, you talked about rolling up your sleeves and putting in some work, because you understand that regardless of what clinician, regardless of what therapist that you go see, that there must be an understanding that I must put in some work on myself. So this lethargy that we have, being very lethargic when it comes to mental health, and especially men. Now, we understand that the Christ, he took 12 men and, well, 12 boys and made them men. And, you know, we talked about how he began to deal with them emotionally, psychologically, but most of all, spiritually, every area holistically in their lives. Do you see or do you foresee there being a shift in how we confront and how we participate in mental health as it relates to the church? Do you see a shift taking place? Because, you know.
I definitely do. But I don't think it's going to be on the scale that it needs to be, because unfortunately, when we read the Bible, we know that in Revelation 2, 5 of the 7 churches become carnal. So if 5 of the 7 churches lose their positioning to the flesh, then where is the extra help supposed to come from? Mm. So, yeah, I believe that there's going to be a shift where people will be able to, and you're starting to see it now. You're starting to see and hear pastors say, you know, I went and got therapy, I went and got help, and we have a lot of other folks who are mentioning it. The reason why you're not going to see it on the scale that it really needs to be on to really make a devastating difference is because we're still connecting poor mental health to demon possession. We're still connecting poor mental health to things that of old doctrines that need to make sense to older folks. And until you start to see younger folks allowed to be in the pulpit, allowed to set up ministries, allowed to do some things, well, we're going to have a problem there. Because a lot of older saints can't get away from what they were taught. A lot of older saints can't get into, so I'm supposed to go talk to this man about my problems behind you. Well, you talk to God and you don't see him. And the Bible actually talks about how can you believe in something that you don't see, but you won't deal with your brother.
Right.
See, the Bible is a fantastic book in terms of turning you back to dealing with someone that is on your plane. God actually says, stop trying to climb up here to me. Just trust that I'm here. Faith is the belief in things not seen. Just trust that I'm here. But go deal with your brother first. What did God say? Don't come offer me anything if you ain't going to take care of your brother first. God says, don't even try to help your brother if you don't even want to help yourself in terms of you can't take a speck of dust out of your brother's eye if you got a plank in yours, meaning deal with your problems first. And if you then do that, if you listen to what Scripture says, if you go, well, can the Scriptures really help me in terms of mental health? Let's talk about it. Moses had an issue with stuttering, panicked when he was told to go back to Egypt. Well, what did God, the great counselor, do? Put your staff down. Let me show you something. Put the staff down, turned into a snake. He said, put your hand inside your cloak. Put it in to pull it out. It was diseased. He put it back in. It was healed. Even after seeing those two miracles, when dealing with the great counselor, Moses goes, but I stutter. Aaron's already on the way, bro. I already sent you somebody who would speak for you. Now, if you read the scripture a little bit further, it says, when you get to the other side of the desert, get with the elders because they're already waiting on you. So I got a team waiting on you. So if you put the work in, I got the resources already in place to deal with whatever it is that I am going to have you do. Well, that's what a counselor does. If you make the time to come and see me, well, then you get the resources that I have, the knowledge that I have, and any teams that I'm connected to. So the examples are there. Jesus, again, same thing. So in defense of people who were struggling with things, he then made certain things clear. And he didn't embarrass folks. When the men were going to stone Mary, what did he say? He spit into the dirt. He wrote something out. Each man looked down, saw his sin. So check what he did. Check what he did. He made sure there was no HIPAA violation. You look down and see your situation. Ooh, yeah, but I'm not going to tell nobody. Right. Why? Because the great counselor is not going to embarrass you. But I need you to see that you got some stuff with you. And then what did he say? Let he without sin cast the first stone. But first, I'm going to show you that I know your sins. But I'm not going to embarrass you.
That's it.
By letting other people know. And then he turns to Mary and says, now, no one's harmed you. But don't sin anymore. Mm-hmm. And what would a counselor tell anybody? Okay, you are protected, but now I need you to stop the thing that you did that you now know is wrong. I'm here for you. So there's examples of quality therapeutics going throughout the Bible, but because we can't see it or because we don't teach it, we cannot teach what we don't see, and we cannot teach what we do not know.
You know, you hit on something there because when you spoke about the reality of grace, that's basically what you said. When you gave the examples, mm-hmm. you know, about, you know, Jesus writing in the sand, and you know, one thing about him, he or the woman at the well, you know,
Yeshua said,
it's needful for me to go through Samaria. Well, why? Because I'm on assignment. And I have a time release, a healing that's got to take place. And so in meeting her, he did not shame her. You know, they had a one-on-one counseling mm-hmm. session. There she is. He's sitting on the well. She's looking at the living well. And, you know, hey, listen, we know the story. Go tell your husband. Well, I don't have a husband. Well, yeah, you're right, because you've had five. The dude that you're with right now, he's not yours. He's somebody else's husband. So let's talk. Let's get to the root of this situation. But he didn't shame her. There's so much, and of course, exactly. You know, the name of the show is Shame Free Life Radio. There's so much shame that's going on, especially in our community. And the shame is very real. It's tangible. We find so much addiction that comes out of the shame to try to silence the voice of shame. And oftentimes there's so many people that are compelled to receive the accolades, the approval, the validation, the affirmation to silence the shame, of what happened to them. And it seems that we have such a lack of grace as it relates to those individuals. But what I want you to speak to, KL, the difference between, and I believe that there is a distinct difference between a disorder and an injury that occurred. I refer to it as an injury. When we look at, you know, the DSM-5 or looking at so many different psychiatric books and manuals, it talks about so many different types of disorder, be it borderline personality disorder, you know, narcissism, et cetera. But there are some people that I believe that are misdiagnosed in our community, whether it's intentionally or not. I think that, you know, that we write them off as being crazy, or this person has a, you know, this person is schizophrenic, or this person is manic. Well, they may be or may not be, but unless you have the wherewithal to be able to properly diagnose that it is schizophrenia or it is mania, then what you're doing, you're placing that person in a category that they don't belong. But perhaps this person is injured because of what happened to him or her. But since we're talking about men. So can you speak to, as far as from your experience, the people that you oftentimes deal with, making a distinction as opposed to just painting everyone with the same brush on the same canvas, those individuals that we deem as being of having a disorder and we demonize them, as opposed to those people who have an injury and they don't have a disorder, something happened and they can't work through it. Can you speak to that reality that's in our community?
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, we have a ton of misdiagnosed folks because look at how special ed is set up. Mm. Kid is a behavioral situation, special ed. We place him in special ed when we don't look at what's causing the behavior. Mm-hmm. Kid may have nothing, no type of learning disabilities whatsoever, but he's just hard to deal with. We stick him in special ed, but no one stops to say, well, what's his home situation with him? What is he seeing? Has this kid seen murders? Is he suffering from PTSD and God knows everything? Okay, so let's go back to what you mentioned about injuries and disorders, right? So an injury can be, I got to dig deep here. Injuries can be, say, acute, or meaning that it's something like, you know, it could be an overuse injury or a chronic injury, depending on the severity of the injury itself. But over time, it should heal depending on how bad it is. But the goal is it's going to be a period of time. A disorder, however, when we're looking at anxiety, mood, psychiatric, or eating, it's connected to something. So until we know what the actual diagnosis is, we don't know what the treatment is. And it's very important that we understand that, because if you look up disorder, I believe it says it's like a state of confusion. And an injury is not a state of confusion. An injury is a momentary, is an instance of an injury, like something happened to create the injury. But what a disorder is different. And it's very important that somebody understand that, because, again, I just had a conversation today talking about blood pressure. If you don't know what your resting blood pressure is, somebody can tell you there's nothing wrong with you. You have to have an idea of what you need to be able to bring to the table, so then the person knows what to do. So often in a lot of mental health situations that we deal with is that there's so much misdiagnosis because there's so many folks who can't take quality assessments. And that's what I was getting to in a long way, is that if we don't do quality assessments, we will not know if it's an injury or if it's a disorder, because each one has to be dealt with differently. But it is on the individual who does that initial assessment. When I was in the classroom teaching, I had to do assessments for all of the kids in a particular class, and then I had to show that I know what each kid needed for me to be able to open up a door for them to get through to learn. A lot of teachers just come in and go, here's your Rexos, get it done. If you guys are too young to know what Rexos are, those are just worksheets. I'm an old dude, we call them Rexos. But that's not working, because if I'm a kid that needs some hands-on, if I'm a kid that needs to listen, or I'm a kid that's visual, you might not have stimulated me, so now you're hurting me. You're creating an injury. So it all comes down to the assessment and then the diagnosis. So I cannot diagnose what I don't first assess. When we have those two things working in conjunction with each other, now we can start to fix some of the problems. That's why folks have to turn to a quality counselor, a quality therapist, to sit down and be able to get a quality assessment, a tangible assessment at that, because your counselor, your therapist should be telling you what they're working on, just like your doctor tells you what's wrong. Don't get with a counselor or therapist that doesn't actually let you know what the objective that you guys are trying to work on or trying to achieve, and then what are the goals that we're going to put in place to get you there. If your therapist is not doing those things, you need to go ahead and leave that person because they're not helping.
Absolutely. You know, we're going to have to definitely bring you back on because there's so many different moving parts to this. There's so many different pieces to this puzzle. We're going to have to pull every piece together so that we can have a picture perfect reality. But the final question, and I know it's a question that we'll have to continue. Forgive me for asking you, but you in the midst of what you do, as far as being a in the counseling arena, in the counseling human services field, you are an author. And you have written some amazing books. One in which I
thank
part
you
of
for your play.
And
yes, sir, yes.
but the blockbuster, in my opinion, of all books was From Gigolo to Jesus. Now, which is really a hallmark as it relates to a rites of passage that many of us, me included, that we have taken as far as how many women you can go through, et cetera, et cetera. And we're seeing again. And this is certainly when we talk about the state of the world, we also have to talk about the state of the church because the church is in the world, even though the word says be in the world, but not of it, of the system of it, that is. So we can't separate the two, but we see even this behavior in the body of Christ. And so when I think of the book that you wrote, From Gigolo to Jesus, you were not dealing with a disorder. I was not dealing with a disorder. We were dealing with injuries that occur in our lives. So as we look back now at the generation that is coming after us, and it is our kingdom responsibility, it is our therapeutic responsibility. It is code and ethics to make sure that we pass the baton in such a professional way, in such a way of excellence to those young men that are coming behind us. But my question to you is, which we're going to carry over, the cluelessness, I call it the cluelessness that's between Black men and Black women. Of Black women truly under, because we're being played universally, but we're being played against each other, pitted against each other. We both have so many different issues that are lying underneath so many other issues. But when we talk about the cluelessness of them not understanding us, but at the same time, it's hard for the woman to understand of us if we're not speaking to her, communicating with her. So I say all that to say, can you speak to, and again, we're going to carry this over to a whole nother show, just dealing with relationships that I really appreciate your expertise in this particular arena as well. But can you speak to the cluelessness? Well, I don't understand him. You know, I'm trying to get to know him, but we're still talking about unaddressed trauma. We're still talking about injuries. We're still talking about abandonment issues. We're still talking about low self-esteem. We're still talking about being a Black man in this country that is stressful in and of itself. So can you talk about the cluelessness between the relationship between Black man and Black woman?
Sure. Well, first, I just want to go with when you said the injuries and the disorders. First of all, injury can create disorder. So me being molested 7 or 8, I can't remember what age, that created a hypersexuality in me with women. So I didn't take on the behavior of the person who molested me. It was my response to the injury that then created the disorder of the sexual appetite becoming, you know, almost a drug addict on sex. Mm-hmm. Because you get so inundated with what you believe to be right, that that becomes the disorder. Because again, remember, I said the disorder is the state of confusion. So to your question between brothers and sisters, well, that simply goes to the hate that hate produces. Mm. You know, our women were left to believe that they weren't protected because we know that slave masters would destroy us and destroy them in other ways too. And throughout the years, it's been an ongoing attack on not allowing brothers and sisters to come together in a unified way. And when we have seen it, when it has been able to poke itself through all the mud, like the I believe it's the orchid that pushes through the mud and becomes a wonderful flower, we see the Ozzie Davis and Ruby Dee. And we see folks who have these long relationships, and we go, oh my God, how did that happen? They were black in this country, and they were black in a time when it was dangerous to be black in this country. But the thing is, when you can actually put it together, it works. When people ask how my wife and I have been together 20 years and how we overcame her catching me cheating 3 times, I didn't say how many times I cheated. She caught me 3 times. But we were able to overcome that before getting married, and then not having those incidents after we got married because my mindset had changed. Mm. So what it is that when so much has been done to keep us separated, well, then after a while, we start to take on the behaviors of those that abuse us, the hate that hate produces. Mm. And so we don't see unity because it's not something that many of us have really truly experienced. We don't know how to speak to our sisters, and our sisters don't know how to speak to us. And that's why we keep looking to folks who we really shouldn't be looking to for information, because those who really should be giving it to us, their mouths are closed. So we turn to entertainers. We turn to athletes. Hell, we're turning to politicians to show us what should be the way to put a marriage together and do things, when it should be the church. It should be our parents. It should be every one of those folks who claim to love the Lord and read that Bible. Because the Bible actually already defines what love is in Corinthians. But we don't align our relationships up like that. The Bible has already aligned how marriage should look. We don't align our relationships up like that. The Bible has actually gave order in how the house should be run. We don't align ourselves up that way. So if we're not aligning ourselves up in the way that the Creator said do it, if that's what you believe, well, then why would you be shocked that you don't have the type of unity inside the relationships that you have? Now, let's say you don't believe in the Bible, anything else that way. That's fine. I don't turn away my atheist folks. Jesus didn't.
Right.
Well, we still have a problem with communication, because even those that don't believe in God still don't understand how to be able to convey to their woman that they're hurting, and then have their woman convey to them that I can fix it, but somehow we got to come together and do that. Hell, the whole 70s and the whole black exploitation era was designed on films where it was, I just got to get past what white man is doing to me, and we couldn't see the love stories amongst all the other stuff, but it was really communication. And one thing I'll leave you before I let this go, because I know we're going to talk about it another time, is communication is like water. It's supposed to flow. But when you block water up and you dam it up, what happens? It builds until it explodes and everyone is drowned and everyone is hurt. So that communication is supposed to be free flowing, back and forth, no interruptions. Mm. And when two people have that type of flow, not only are they healing and lifting each other up, they are bonding and they're becoming greater than any individual piece that they could be. And when that starts to happen, when that synergy starts to happen, it is what God said, two become one. But because we don't align ourselves with things that we believe are greater than us, well, we suffer the consequences. Mm.
K.L., there's so much to be said about this particular subject. Can you stand the pain? And it's a rhetorical question, because if you have enough pain, the answer is no, I cannot stand it. And so with that being said, what are some of your final thoughts as far as bringing a remedy to all of this? And I know that this you know, we're not done with this conversation at all. But if you could give some final words to those individuals that are hurting out there, that are fragmented in their own souls, that have issues with, just anger issues, et cetera. But primarily men, you know, men that, you know, that, you know, not finding any peace at the bar, not finding no peace in church. But God still has a purpose and a plan for their lives. And so what are some of your final thoughts as it relates to being injured, mental health, and the stigma that surrounds it concerning men, primarily black men?
I would say, understand that your pain is not greater than you are. It just makes you believe that. Second, don't be fearful to ask for help. Brothers are quick to ask for help when they're trying to get up in somebody's pain. Use that same energy. Keep that same energy when it comes to how do I fix what's wrong. And understand, for me as a Christian, I'm always going to offer the faith, not to just indoctrinate you, to give you another route around what is wrong. And then when you start to see that there's other pathways to a calmness and to a peace, you then can tackle the things that are really wrong, but you need assistance. Don't be scared to invite somebody to the table to help you. Jesus said, I'm here for the sinners. I'm not here for the righteous. Because he came to show you that I'm here for those who need help. I've not come for the righteous. I've come for the sinners. And we have to understand that as those sinners, there's somebody searching for us to help us. But they cannot help if your mouth is closed. A closed mouth does not get fed. And I'll leave you with what my grandmother left me when I first got separated from my first wife and I was back home and couldn't believe that I had screwed up, that I messed up and was back home. She said, cry tonight and then get your ass up and start living your life, because we didn't raise you to be soft. And I want every man out there to understand that there's nothing soft with being emotional. What's soft is that you're laying there and dying in silence. That's soft. A brave, strong man goes to somebody else and says, I can't. Can you help me? And if that man can't help you, go to somebody else. But there's help out there. There's brothers out there who will help you. They have to know you need help. Do that, and we can start to fix things. There's some women out there waiting to get behind a dude like that. But they're not going to expose themselves because they've been hurt too. And that's a whole other thing that we need to talk about. But just put it into motion and watch how it all falls into place. I'll leave you with that.
Well, I'll tell you what, K.O., you know, that's a perfect segue to talk about how people can get in contact with you. We know that you are an author. We know that you're doing so much work within the community from a counseling therapeutic standpoint. How can people get in contact with you if they want to set up a session, if they want to connect with you?
Sure. They can go for counseling. You can go to my website, which is Bravin, B-R-A-V-I-N. Consultant, consultants.com, bravenconsultants.com. You will see that there's a link for a discovery call if you just want to have a free conversation where it's like, can we just figure out what's wrong? Or if you know you really just want to go straight to the counseling, there's another link that you can just click it and set up a counseling session with me and we'll go from there. All my links are there. That's the way to reach me. If you're interested in just going to my publishing company, Bravin Publishing. Same thing, B-R-A-V-I-N, publishing.com. And that's all my publishing information and all the stuff that's there, because I do that as well. But the one thing I would say is you can reach me on any social media page. Just reach out, Keith K.L. Belvin. And also, if you want to hit me directly, my email is info@bravenconsultants.com. Send me an email and reach out. Do not be scared. I'm here to talk. Do the discovery call. It don't cost you anything. Let's figure it out. Let's see if I am the person. But here's one promise I'll make, and I don't make many. If I cannot help you, I will not hurt you. If I cannot help you, I will say so, but I will work with you to find somebody who can help you or at least give you my professional opinion to send you off in the right direction. I do not take cases if I do not think I can help the person, because then I'm doing damage to you simply for a dollar. I won't do that. God won't allow me to do that. And so I just want to say that to you, and anybody listening, don't struggle quietly. There's people out there. I have people I'm connected to. If for any reason my schedule doesn't work with your schedule, I got brothers and sisters that I can reach out to get you somebody. So please don't sit there and get to the point that you think the only way to deal with something is to check out and turn your lights off. Don't do that. There's somebody here to help. And I'm here.
Absolutely. Look him up. Keith K.L. Belvin, he is the real deal. And it's a pleasure to have you on the Shame Free Life Radio, 15 Minutes of Shame. You know, we got to definitely have you back because there's so many other issues that we need to bring to the forefront and come up with a remedy for this sickness. And we know that there is definitely a remedy.
I'm ready.
Absolutely. Well, we're definitely going to have you back. Thank you so much again. If this show was a blessing to you out there, family, just hit us up. Also, do you have a Cash App, KL?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. $ KL Belvin. I tend to forget it. $ KL Belvin. If anybody wants to, any offerings and stuff like that, I tend to almost forget I have one. Yeah. $ KL Belvin. Real simple.
Absolutely. So we oftentimes sow into people that mean us no good. Well, how about sowing into people that do mean you good and have your best interests at heart? And definitely my Cash App is $ The Shame Free Life. That's $ The Shame Free Life. Until next time, as we always say, that we're definitely here to help you rebuild your life one brick at a time. Why? Because your life begins when you say so.
Thank you for joining us on the Shame Free Life Radio Show for 15 Minutes of Shame. Follow us on IG and Twitter at Shame Free Life. For information on promoting your business with us, contact us at theshamefreelife@gmail.com. Until next time, your life begins when you say so.